ಏತೆ ಶ್ರುತಿ ತೇ ನೃಪವೇದ ಗೀತೆ ಸ್ವಯಾಭಿಪೃಷ್ಟೆ ಚ ಸನಾತನೆ ಚ ಯೇ ವೈ ಪುರಾ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮಣ ಆಹ ತುಷ್ಟ ಆರಾಧಿತೋ ಭಗವಾನ್ ವಾಸುದೇವಃ ಏತೇ ಶ್ರುತಿ ತೇ ನೃಪವೇದ ಗೀತೆ ತ್ವಯಾಭಿಪೃಷ್ಟೆ ಚ ಸನಾತನೆ ಚ ಯೇ ವೈ ಪುರಾ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮಣ ಆಹ ತುಷ್ಟ ಆರಾಧಿತೋ ಭಗವಾನ್ ವಾಸುದೇವಃ ಏತೇ ಶ್ರುತಿ ತೇ ನೃಪವೇದ ಗೀತೆ ತ್ವಯಾಭಿಪೃಷ್ಟೆ ಚ ಸನಾತನೆ ಚ ಯೇ ವೈ ಪುರಾ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮಣ ಆಹ ತುಷ್ಟ ಆರಾಧಿತೋ ಭಗವಾನ್ ವಾಸುದೇವಃ
ಏತೇ ಶ್ರುತಿ ತೇ ನೃಪವೇದ ಗೀತೆ ತ್ವಯಾಭಿಪೃಷ್ಟೆ ಚ ಸನಾತನೆ ಚ
ಏತೆ ಆಲ್ ದಟ್ ಇಸ್ ಡಿಸ್ಕ್ರೈಬ್ಡ್ ಶ್ರುತಿ ವೇ ತೇ ಅಂಟು ಯು ನೃಪ ಓ ಮಹಾರಾಜ್ ಪರೀಕ್ಷಿತ್ ವೇದ ಗೀತೆ ಅಕಾರ್ಡಿಂಗ್ ಟು ದ ವರ್ಷನ್ ಆಫ್ ದ ವೇದಸ್ ತ್ವಯಾ ಬೈ ಯುವರ್ ಮೆಜೆಸ್ಟಿ ಅಭಿಪೃಷ್ಟೆ ಬೀಯಿಂಗ್ ಪ್ರಾಪರ್ಲಿ ಇನ್ಕ್ವೈರ್ಡ್ ಚ ಆಲ್ಸೋ ಸನಾತನೆ ಇನ್ ದ ಮ್ಯಾಟರ್ ಆಫ್ ಎಟರ್ನಲ್ ಟ್ರೂತ್ ಚ ವೆರಿಲಿ ಯೇ ವಿಚ್ ವೈ ಸರ್ಟನ್ಲಿ ಪುರಾ ಬಿಫೋರ್ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮಣೆ ಅಂತ್ ಲಾರ್ಡ್ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮ ಆಹ ಸೆಡ್ ತುಷ್ಟ ಬೀಯಿಂಗ್ ಸ್ಯಾಟಿಸ್ಫೈಡ್ ಆರಾಧಿತ ಬೀಯಿಂಗ್ ವರ್ಶಿಪ್ಡ್ ಭಗವಾನ್ The personality of Godhead. Vasudevah, Lord Krishna. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada ki. Your Majesty Maharaj Parikshit, know that all that I have described in reply to your proper inquiry is just according to the version of the Vedas. And it is eternal truth. This was described personally by Lord Krishna unto Brahma, with whom the Lord was satisfied upon being properly worshipped. Purport. The two different ways of reaching the spiritual sky and thereby getting emancipation from all material bondage, namely either the direct process of reaching the kingdom of God or the gradual process through the other higher planets of the universe are set forth exactly according to the version of the Vedas. The Vedic versions in this connection are Yada sarve pramuchyante kama ye asya hrudi sritaha atamartyo amruto bhavati atra brahma samashnute ಬೃಹದಾರಣ್ಯಕ ಪುರಾಣ ಅಂಡ್ ತೇ ಅರಿಚ ಅಭಿಸಂಭವಂತಿ ಬೃಹದಾರಣ್ಯಕ ಪುರಾಣ ಬೃಹದಾರಣ್ಯಕ ಉಪನಿಷತ್ ದೋಸ್ who are free from all material desires, which are diseases of the heart, are able to conquer death and enter the kingdom of God through the archiplanets. These Vedic versions corroborate the version of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and the latter is further confirmed by Shukadeva Goswami, who affirms that the truth was disclosed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, Vasudeva, to Brahma, the first authority on the Vedas. The disciplic succession holds that the Vedas were uttered by Lord Krishna to Brahma, by Brahma to Narada, and by Narada to Vyasdev, and then by Vyasdev to Shukadeva Goswami, and so on. So there is no difference between the versions of all the authorities. The truth is eternal, and as such there cannot be any new opinion about the truth. That is the way of knowing the knowledge contained in the Vedas. It is not a thing to be understood by one's erudite scholarship or by the fashionable interpretations of mundane scholars. There is nothing to be added and nothing to be subtracted, because the truth is the truth. One has to accept, after all, some authority. The modern scientists are also authorities for the common man, for some scientific truths. The common man follows the version of the scientist. This means that the common man follows the authority. The Vedic knowledge is also received in that way. The common man cannot argue about what is beyond the sky or beyond the universe. He must accept the versions of the Vedas as they are understood by the authorized disciplic succession. In the Bhagavad Gita also, the same process of understanding the Gita is stated in the 4th chapter. If one does not follow the authoritative version of the Acharyas, he will vainly search after the truth mentioned in the Vedas. Om Ajnanatamirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuh Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupah Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Saavadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamsha Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swamin Nitinamine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gauratvishe Namaha. He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Shri Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Krupa Sindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabho Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Your Majesty Maharaj Parikshit, know that all that I have described in reply to your proper inquiry is just according to the version of the Vedas, and it is eternal truth. This was described personally by Lord Krishna unto Brahma, with whom the Lord was satisfied upon being properly worshipped. here, after all this discussion, in the conclusion, he is saying that whatever I spoke about the Lord and the heart, and the previous chapter also, these are all according to the Vedic version, as Lord Krishna has spoken to Brahma, and as it comes in disciplic succession. In the path of spiritual life, a firm faith in the predecessor acharyas and the parampara that is coming down and the knowledge that is being handed over, it's very, very important. Often, practicing devotees don't have full faith in their own scriptures or the practices. For example, when we have the Diksha ceremony, Diksha program, often we chant the Vaishnava mantras. Nama Om Vishnupadaya, we chant Om Ajnanatam Brandasya, and we offer the oblations of ghee into the fire. And some people think, oh, this is a well-known, every day we chant, because it's a very familiar mantra. But if we chant Purusha Suktam, Sri Suktam, Vishnu Suktam, something like that, and that is more high sounding, people appreciate it more. Something not so familiar, and they think that is much greater. Sometimes even when they see the Vedic Brahmanas chanting and offering oblations of ghee and everything, they think they are more advanced. Often there is a misunderstanding like that. That's because of a kind of lack of faith in one's own practices. One doesn't know the value of these mantras. In the same manner, when we chant Brahma Samhita, some people say, oh, it's Brahma Samhita. Or it's from Chaitanya Charitamrita. People take those quotes lightly. Because often they think Brahma Samhita is monopoly of only ISKCON. It's not true. Brahma Samhita was discovered by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Adikeshava temple. And the Brahma Samhita very beautifully explains the position of different devatas. And some scholars speculate that maybe it was written by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. And then his followers say that they found, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu found this in Adikeshava temple. So this kind of speculation has been there amongst the scholars, because Brahma Samhita so lucidly, in a crystal clear manner, offers the position of different devatas. So because of such speculations forwarded by the scholars, mundane scholars, as Prabhupada says, even sometimes in the circle of devotees there are doubts, or people think that we are quoting, we may better quote from something what they have, other people have more faith in. In that context, often the Vedic scholars, they may condemn Srila Prabhupada, saying that why are you so freely using the word Vedic literature? When Prabhupada says Vedic literature, he not only includes the four Vedas, he includes the Upanishads, he includes the Puranas also. Now many people, they say Puranas are Smritis, that we don't accept. We only accept the Vedas and Upanishads. We don't accept the Puranas, Mahabharata, Ramayana. So you cannot label them as Vedic literature. There are some scholars who argue like that. We can actually give many counter-arguments to this. Why did Prabhupada use the word Vedic literature for including Mahabharata, Ramayana and Puranas, everything? Because we find Shankaracharya, Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, they all wrote commentary to Bhagavad Gita. Now where does Bhagavad Gita come? Bhagavad Gita comes in Mahabharata. Then if Shankaracharya doesn't accept Smritis, then why should he write commentary to Bhagavad Gita, which is a part of Smriti? He wrote Sharirika Bhashya. So we can challenge. If Smritis are rejected by Shankara, he should not write any commentary to them. Besides that, we also find Madhvacharya, in his Vedanta Sutra commentary, he quotes from Bhavishya Purana. From Bhavishya Purana he quotes and he says he is actually explaining a Vedanta Sutra concept using Bhavishya Purana. And he also says that the Vedas, the Upanishads, the Mahabharata, the original Ramayana, and also the Puranas, in Itihasas, all these things put together are called as the Vedic literature. Madhvacharya quotes also. Now, those who say they accept only the Shrutis, namely the Upanishads, we can quote from Chandogya Upanishad, which says the Puranas are the fifth Veda. Chandogya Upanishad itself says. So the acceptance of Smritis is inside the Shrutis only. Can quote like that. In this way, we can... here you will find Prabhupada in his purport, he is quoting from Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. What is he trying to say here? Those who are free from all material desires, which are desires of the heart, are able to conquer death and enter the kingdom of God through the archiplanets. So he is quoting from Upanishad purposefully for those who only accept the Shrutis. Even from Shrutis, we can show often the people who are followers of Shrutis think that you know, the ultimate truth has no form, it has no qualities or attributes, and the life beyond this world is simply like Brahma Jyoti, and there is silence, it is beyond description in words, it's beyond any explanation. So that is the notion they have. That is why Srila Prabhupada wrote Ishopanishad also. He took the Ishopanishad and especially verse after verse Prabhupada is challenging Mayavadis. Like he says, tat ejati, tan naijati, tat dure, tat vantike. So Prabhupada is saying, here it is talking about Lord is walking and Lord does not walk. Now who can walk without legs? Prabhupada is asking. Similarly, iranmayena patrena satya sahapitam mukham. What is this mukham? Face. The face of the Lord that is covered with dazzling effulgence. So Prabhupada would quote from the Upanishads and prove the same Puranas, whatever Puranas explained, that is there in the Upanishads also. So we need an Acharya to explain it. In this way, Prabhupada is quoting here to show that it is not that the absolute truth that is beyond this material world is not some vague concept or idea. There are spiritual planets and there is Supreme Lord and there are activities going on. In fact, there's an explanation for Om. Om has three letters, three syllables, A, U, Ma. A represents the Purushottam, Lord, Supreme Lord. And U represents his energy, internal potency. And Ma represents the Jivas. So this is the truth. Now the Purushottama, if you say Purushottama is Vishnu, A is Vishnu, then U is Lakshmi. And Ma is all the devotees of Lakshmi Narayan. When you say A is Krishna and U is Srimati Radharani, then all the Golokavasis, Golokvindavanvasis, they all are Ma. So in this way, the Lord, his internal potency and his Jiva, the living entities who are his servants, that is represented by Om. That is explained. In fact, the Goswami has highlighted this in the scriptures as a very important truth. Because the Omkar Upasaks, Om ityekaksharam brahma vyaharan ma manusmaran yaprayati samadbhavam yati nastyatra samshayaha. Krishna is saying in Bhagavad Gita, Om iti ekaksharam brahma. Those who chant Om like that and leave their body, Krishna says, they will go to a destination from where they will never return back. No, it is not only a question of just chanting Omkar, but also one should have developed one's consciousness. So one has to have this understanding. There is Supreme Lord, his energy, and then the Prakriti, all the Jivas, and their relationship with the Lord and internal potency, and which is actually the central subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam. and all the Puranas. Actually, there are many Puranas which describe about demigods and material benefits. But then, after having read all those Puranas and practiced, one will come to the Bhagavata Purana, which is Paramahamsa Samhita, where one will understand the Purushottam Lord, the Supreme Lord, and His internal potency, and the spiritual world and activities. That is why Srimad Bhagavatam is called as a natural commentary to the Vedanta Sutra. Because what cannot be understood by studying the Vedantic verses or sutras can be very easily understood by the explanation to Vedanta, which is Srimad Bhagavatam. So, we can easily show that the Smritis and the Shrutis and Pancharatra and the four Vedas, they all constitute the Vedic literature. In fact, Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Pitahamasya jagato mata dhata pitamaha vedyam pavitramonkaram riksama yajurevacha. There he is saying, Pitam ahamasya jagato. I am the father. I am the mata also. I am mother also, he is saying. I am mata, I am dhata. I am prapitamaha also. I am father, I am grandfather, I am great grandfather also. And I am mother also, he is saying. Vedyam, knowable. I am the ultimate knowable. Pavitram, most holy. And then, by Rik, Sama, Yajur, Evacha. By studying all these Vedas of Rik, Sama, Yajur and all these things, I am to be known. Now, when we go to sell Bhagavad Gita, sometimes people ask, do you have the Vedas? I want to study the four Vedas. In fact, there are many people who argue about the Vedic culture itself. In fact, there has been a talk amongst the scholars that the original Aryans came from somewhere, from southern part of Russia. Originally they existed there, and then from there they migrated into India sometime in 2 BC, second millennium before Christ, BC. And then they tried to give an interpretation saying that, you know, the Indian culture started flourishing. So they want to say that there was some culture which was pre-Sanskrit or pre-Vedic culture, which or pre-Indian culture which existed there, southern part of Russia, and then it came into India. So this was actually postulate, it was actually a proposition given. But if you very carefully analyze, you will see, when Mohenjo-daro Harappa excavation was done, they found that those ruins are actually 2500 BC, 3500 BC to 2500 BC, if you see like that. They are pretty old. And there you find things like, they took out stones, where they found excavations of pictures in stones, where you find a Brahmana is sitting and offering ahuti in a Yajnakund. They found like that. Or they found some excavations of yogis sitting in meditative posture. There are this kind of cows, bulls. So they found many kinds of excavations which exactly, which actually was what they called as the Aryan culture. Now if Aryan culture came in 2 century BC from southern part of Russia to or Europe to India, into India, then how did it exist in Mohenjo-daro Harappa 3500 BC, in 2500 BC? When that question was asked, then this whole theory was finished, that it came from outside. It actually existed very much in India, much before. Not only that, we can ask a question, another question, very simple question. We know very well that Buddha, he rejected the Vedas. That is well known amongst all. Not only in ISKCON it is known, outside also it is known. And that is why the Dalit community people are fond of Buddha very much. Because they want to reject the Vedas. So they were looking for someone who will reject the Vedas so they can join with them. So that is well known. So if Buddha, actually he had a reason why he rejected the Vedas. Because the Brahmanas were misusing the Vedas for killing the animals and becoming non-vegetarians taking advantage of the Gomedha Yajna, Ashwamedha Yajna and all that. Actually, the Gomedha Yajna, Ashwamedha Yajna, they are performed by very qualified brahmanas. After offering those animals in fire, they would immediately get a human body. But later on, that facility was misused. When Buddha saw that, he made ahimsa as the prime dharma. And he rejected the Vedas. Now, what was the period of Buddha? It was 2500 BC. Or some scholars argue that it is 1887 BC. Whatever it be, whether it be 2500 BC or 1887 BC. If Buddha has to reject Vedas, the Vedas have to be there. Otherwise, how can he reject them? Isn't it? That means Vedas surely existed certainly before that. Undoubtedly. Because there had been scholars who were trying to argue that the Vedas are of recent origin. So this one statement will immediately, outrightly reject such kind of foolish propositions. So, there are many scholars who have researched into the origin of the Vedas or how old they are, how antique they are. Many of them have come. Some of them have given 2500 BC, then 5000 BC, some of them said 8000 BC. Some of them have given such periods, huge, millions of years. So finally we can understand that their ability to know the antiqueness of Vedas limits that number, that's all. They may say 2500 or 2000 or 3000. They are not just whimsically throwing some numbers. They have used some calculations based on various arguments. They prove that Vedas are this much old. But in Pune, there was a Sammelan also, where several days of meeting went on about studying about the origin of Vedas. So many scholars from all over India had come offering their presentations. And they found that all the presentations given were valid, and they compared and they merged, and they found that Vedas are actually millions of years old. I don't have those names with me. If anybody is interested, I can show you the names of different scholars who presented. So, Prabhupada very precisely asked this question. Can you put a date to the wisdom? Prabhupada asked. You can never put a date to wisdom. Veda means knowledge. So, you cannot put a date to knowledge. Knowledge existed from the dawn of creation. It has been coming down. So, in the last century, especially in the 1700 and 1800, the British people, when they came to India, one of their goals was to propagate Christianity. So when they came, they found that the Indians are deeply rooted in Sanskrit and study of the Vedic literature and everything. How to spread Christianity? So what they thought, if we convert Bible into Sanskrit, then it will become acceptable by Brahmanas. They thought like that. That was their first goal. So they learned Sanskrit. So they can translate whole Bible into Sanskrit. So then the Brahmanas will think, oh, this is also in Sanskrit. We would like to read it. So they started translating Bible, literally. But the Brahmanas were still not attracted. Then they started translating the Sanskrit texts of Vedas, Puranas, Upanishads into English. And they wanted to show the world, and especially show Indians, that these are all fiction stories, these are all useless, they are all simply the Vedic times, people are barbarians and people are uncultured and people were not so advanced like us and everything. They wanted to show that. With that intention, they translated all the Puranas, Vedas, Upanishads into English. And what was the result? To some extent they were successful. How? Because most of the Indians, like even Prabhupada says, he went to Scottish college for studying. So for any boy or girl coming from good family, naturally they would want to go to the British colleges, prestigious colleges. So you will find some pictures where you find somebody may be having a shikha also and wearing a coat also in those times. Have you any of you seen a picture? He'll be wearing a shirt, a coat and shikha also, and tilak also will be there. So it was the period when they were gradually, Indians were becoming westernized. Now everything is gone now. So, you will find that long before that, Marco Polo, when he came to India, he went back and he wrote about the wealth of India, about the jewels and minerals, and so much of wealth of India had glorified. After hearing Marco Polo's writing, Christopher Columbus became very inspired. He thought that let me go to India. So he wanted to come to India through a different route. Again, with the same desire to plunder the wealth of India. But when he came, instead of landing in India, he landed in America. Yeah. But you can see, they had already returned. So when the business people would come to India, they would come and take the silver, gold, diamond, all the wealth of India. They would have some exchange and then they would take it to their countries. But the later business people, they thought that, you know, gold and silver anybody can carry. We will carry something more valuable. So they started carrying the Sanskrit texts from India. So one person, whatever Sanskrit was, they were written down. People would make many copies, just like we make Xeroxes now. People made copy. And they would take the copies and offer it as gift to their relatives. That is how you find that in the West you find people like Henry David Thoreau or Emerson. Emerson has read Bhagavad Gita, even Bhagavatam, even Kathopanishad. He quotes from that in his books. Emerson or Henry David Thoreau, that kind of scholars. In fact, in one of his writings, Henry David Thoreau says, in Bhagavad Gita we find the greatest and purest and topmost knowledge. Something like that he writes. He appreciates Bhagavad Gita. So, we find in this way, instead of these people coming and condemning the Vedic literature and proving them to be useless, it had opposite effect. Because when they translated all these things, their own people read it and they became attracted. And they started becoming Vedic followers. In this way, the Vedic knowledge, which was originally all over the world, many, many millions of years ago, it had become limited to India, and again it started spreading in the West. If you see in the West, you will find many translations of Upanishads, many translations of Puranas available in the West. Not only Max Müller, apart from Max Müller, also many others. That is because the Western world started appreciating the wisdom of the East. Even before, if only Prabhupada was there at that time, miracles would have happened. If Prabhupada's books were available at the time of Henry David Thoreau and Walden and everything, or Krishna consciousness movement would have gone practically to every town and village by now. So, in this way, the Indologists who came, they wanted to actually undermine the Vedas. You know what they did? In order to say that the Vedas are of recent origin, they are not very old, one of the techniques they employed was to say that the Puranic texts and Upanishadic texts, they are all appearing to be of this particular century, a recent century, because from the writing you can understand, like the standard of Sanskrit, from that we can say which period it belongs to. Whether it belongs to this AD or this BC, you can say. So they were trying to pinpoint, see these verses in the Vedas or these verses in the Puranas, they look like this. They don't look like as if they are very old. Because the old writings are more archaic, they call it. They are more complex Sanskrit. But then when they took Srimad Bhagavatam, they found it was very, very old. The Sanskrit used in Bhagavatam in many sections is very old Sanskrit. So the Indian scholars challenged them, how can you say they are of recent origin? They seem to be very, very old, these writings. And then they said, maybe some scholar must have imitated the very old writing to prove that they are old. They were saying, either way you beat up. You go this way, you beat like this, you go this way, you beat up. Like that they were concocting. Basically they wanted to say that these literatures are of recent origin. And these things started just one century ago, one or two centuries ago. Recent. Before that, nobody would challenge the authority of the Vedas. Nobody can dare to, because the Vedas are, Vedas have been outstanding in the past. They have been proving themselves, so nobody questioned them. These are the people who wanted to, it's only because of eagerness to prove their cultural superiority. That's the only reason. They wanted to establish that. Why they said Aryans came from there? Do you know the reason? Because they, like all the Europeans, for example, if you see, they say that everything in this world originated from Europe only. If you see America, America has their own theory. They say everything in the world started from America only. They have another new theory. Similarly, of course, when Indians say everything started from Indian culture, if you see like that, and that should be based on evidence. And the evidences are there. As we were quoting many evidences. For example, when we study the Vedas, now keeping aside these Indologists and mundane scholars and debaters, let us keep them aside and just see the value of Vedas themselves without having to depend on anyone. What do the Vedas present? Apart from the spiritual sciences, which are very deep and which may be inaccessible for the common man, there are also many portions of Vedas which are easily accessible and understandable. Say, for example, Gandharva Veda, which consists of arts, poetry, music, dance, drama. This is all coming in Gandharva Veda, which was propagated by Bharat Muni. Similarly, there is Ayurveda, propagated by Lord Patanjali. Patanjali and given by Dhanvantri. Of course, there is Charak Samhita and subsequently. Then there is also Dhanurveda, which was originally taught by Bhrigu Muni, the military science, which is also a part of the Vedas. So there is Gandharva Veda, there is Ayurveda, there is Dhanurveda, there is Arthashastra also, which talks about the science of how to manage the government, how the king should manage his ministers, his army, his people. There is elaborate science talking about Arthashastra, management, or how a king should do. How a king should balance everything. And Sama, Beda, Dama, Danda and all these things are taught in very great detail. In fact, I heard in Russian army, they are taking this valuable information and teaching to their defense people. There is so much wisdom. Actually, no other part of the world, these things have been taught so deeply. For example, if you take Hitopadesh, Hitopadesh is science of friendship. How to make friendship. With whom to make friendship, whom not to make friendship, and how to avoid cunning people, or if you encounter cunning people, how to deal with them. Everything is there in Hitopadesh, you will find. Like you find the rat is living inside a hole, and then somebody is calling him, come out sir, come out, come out. He is asking, who are you? And a crow is sitting outside. And the rat is saying, why should I come out? You are my enemy. The crow says, you know, actually crows are enemies of rats, but I am a special crow, I am not your enemy. You know, he come out, he says, and then there is a lot of talk that goes on between the whole, there is an entire section in Hitopadesh, the conversation between this rat and the crow. And they teach about friendship, a lot of things, you will read. So, you will find in this way, we also find Sulabha Sutras, which is Vedic mathematics, and the algebra, the number 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 9, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, these numbers, they originally went from Vedic texts to Arabia, and from Arabia into Europe, and based on that all the scientific advancement have happened in Europe, which went from here, if you see like that. We can quote innumerable things like that. If we want to talk about the Vedas from a layman's point of view, leave alone a spiritualist point of view. So, modern man has again come to grip with the fact that the Vedas are not of recent origin. They must be very, very old, based on many factors. One of the things is the realization that one attains by studying and practicing the Vedas. From a spiritual point of view, people are beginning to realize. And also the Vedas contain knowledge which is unchangeable knowledge, which is such a great purpose. Is truth is truth, purpose is here. His purpose. Truth cannot be changed. So if one doesn't follow the truth, then one will suffer. Then one has to come back to truth. That is why Prabhupada is quoting about the spiritual world in the first half, and the second part he is talking about the authority of the Vedic knowledge. And then he says that everyone has to accept some authority. You cannot avoid accepting any authority. Of course, one can avoid accepting any authority and do what one wants to do, but one should be ready to suffer. Those who are wise, those who want to become happy, have to search, whom should I follow? Like yesterday, when I went for book distribution, I met a very smart boy. He was from VIT college. Going in the train, he was sitting. So, one of the first statements I hear from people when I distribute a book is, I am not interested. It's a very common sentence. And I used to ask them back, are you not interested in becoming happy? I asked them. So this boy immediately replied back saying that, definitely, but not in the way that you are. So then I sat with him. Oh, he's really a smart fellow. Then I sat with him. I spent about half an hour talking to him. So then he was telling me, I am really curious to know more. Only thing is, I have no time. Then I was telling him, do you think Arjuna had any time in the battlefield of Kurukshetra? Was he not in a greater crisis than you? He thought for a while and he said, yeah, definitely true. And then he said, maybe I think, you know, people like you guys, you are mendicants, you have no other business other than reading these books. Maybe you can read, you know. But even if I am given time, even if I have time, I don't know whether I will benefit from reading all this. Then he immediately showed the cover and told him, Arjuna was not a mendicant. Who was he? He was a family man. He had wives, he had children. So, you want to become family man or brahmachari? Asked him. He said, I want to marry. He said, yes, that means you should read Bhagavad Gita. Isn't it? You have to study. So, we can easily see when we go out in the outside world to meet the people, we often find a kind of very nonchalant attitude. People, as soon as people see a spiritual book, immediately they become averse. They just don't want to read. The reason is very simple. It is because of the foreign invasion, especially the invasion of the British. Even in the time of invasion of Mughals, still there was culture. In fact, the Mughal invasion brought the Sanatana Dharma followers together, more close to each other, and they were very carefully practicing. But the invasion of British, for example, I heard the chilies, they are not from India at all. The chilies are actually brought by British. In fact, there is a place called Chile in Europe. Yeah. Where is it? South America, I think. South America. So from there the word chili has come. In India, the only hard thing they would use is the miri. Black pepper, yeah. Black pepper. Anything you want hot, use only black. And black pepper is so useful. Actually, it is in one of the Puranic texts it's given that the haldi or the turmeric should be used always with pepper. When you use pepper, we also should use haldi also. And the reason is given why we use that. When we combine this and use, actually when haldi or the turmeric stays in the body, it can avoid cancer. So when you put pepper along with haldi, when you mix it and put it, it is made to stay in the body for a longer period of time. Otherwise it will be drained out quickly. Like that. So when people read the Vedic text, for example, there are rutucharya, they call it. Rutucharya means according to rutu, what should be eaten. What fruits should be eaten at what time? For example, watermelon should be eaten in summer season, yeah. Isn't it? For example, taking rava laddu or taking puran poli, that should not be taken in winter season or rainy season. So there's a season for everything. And most amazingly, you will find in the Vedas it is said, in January, February, March, April, May, June, you will find. In each ritu, a particular kind of fruit comes out in the nature. For example, watermelon grows best during summer season. And this goes to show that there is God behind everything. Because He exactly gives you the fruit what you need at that time. Only modern man with his twisted mind wants the fruit in all the seasons. Like I heard, when some 2-3 brahmacharis from Bombay, they had gone to South India, they were in Kerala sometime along with his own as Dayanath Swami Maharaj. So he was telling a very interesting pastime. He was telling us, when he was living there, these devotees, it was actually rainy season. And they had brought the mangoes from the mango orchard. And they made a glass full of mango juice, big glass full of mango juice. And one gentleman from Europe had come also to meet Maharaj. Of course, Maharaj wasn't planning to take any mango juice, but they had made mango juice. So this man saw the mango juice and he asked, "Can I take it?" And then they were looking at each other. They said, "Okay, you can take it, you take it." And the man drank the juice. And Maharaj was also sitting. So the man drank two full glasses, he took. And then he asked Maharaj, "Maharaj, what about you? Why are you not drinking?" And Maharaj said, "I don't know, they are not serving me." Maharaj said. Then this man asked the brahmacharis, "Why are you not serving Maharaj?" And they said, because this is, because the mango is full of worms, they said. Because it is rainy season. Maharaj was shocked. Maharaj was shocked and Maharaj asked them, "Then why did you serve him?" "Actually, Maharaj, we had made and kept it, but he asked, so we gave." And then Maharaj was telling, this man, after hearing all these things, he said, "Oh, really?" He said. And then he again took the third glass and drank it. That was even more right. Isn't it? So, you will see, even if you make mango in off-season, you may make it, but it will have this kind of problems, worms. Like we follow this chaturmas. Why? Because you don't take milk at a certain time, then you don't take dahi at a certain time, because they all are connected to these things. What should be eaten at which ritu? That's mentioned. So I'm just telling you one example from the Vedas, eatable. What should be eaten, what should not be eaten. Not only what should be eaten, what should not be eaten, according to one's bodily constitution. We have a kapha, vata, pitta body accordingly. So the Vedic information is so scientific, even a layman can understand that it is not ordinary knowledge. It cannot be written by any ordinary Tom, Dick and Harry. Any layman cannot write such a book. So in this way there are hundreds and thousands of subjects in the Vedas interwoven with examples and stories and experiences and realizations. Vedas are very, very deep. So in India you will find in the household, in the local languages, they have many slogans people have. Like for example, anything the parents want to teach their child, they will quote some small brief like a aphorism or a phrase or a quote in the local language. And most amazingly you find whatever we have in one language matches with people in other language. Like I was telling once, in Tamil we say, "Ayandil valayadadu, ayambadil valayuma." In Tamil we say, which means the bamboo can be bent when it is 5, when it becomes 50, you cannot bend it because it becomes dry. When it is green, you can bend it. Now somebody said it is there in Maharashtra also, isn't it? Somebody said it is there in Karnataka also. Somebody said it is there in Andhra also. North India also people say it is there. How? It's because these are all coming from the Vedas and Puranas only. And then people have made them into simple slogans and phrases in the local language. And then it comes down in the family. People keep quoting. And then people will be teaching their children why you should do this, why you should not do this, what is dharma, what is adharma. They implement it in their lives in a very easy manner. In the same manner, you find medicines also, home medicines. They are so simple to prepare and they are so effective, much more than the allopathic medicines. The allopathic medicines, they cure quickly and they leave a terrible side effect in the bodies, toxins and everything like that. So, we have to develop our faith in the Vedas by observing the Vedas from various angles. We can talk about 50 subjects like this. I am just talking one or two subjects. If you take each subject, compare the modern man's approach, compare the Vedic approach. Every individual devotee, depending on how much doubts we have, that much we should do research. Because in spiritual life, advancement is based on faith. Knowledge and faith, two things. Two things are said in Nectar of Devotion. You need to acquire knowledge with the desire to attain Krishna, and we also should develop faith in that knowledge. Deep faith in that knowledge. Otherwise, if somebody somebody is thinking, you know, Prabhupada is saying this, you know, Prabhupada is saying this, or our Vaishnavas are saying that. So why should we think what Vaishnavas are saying is cheap or simple? It is very profound. We should have full faith. One should not have any. First of all, unless we, heart of hearts, have a firm faith, we cannot give faith to others. Not possible. Like some devotee, one devotee saw that somebody is coming and chanting one or two rounds and becoming very enthusiastic in Krishna consciousness. So this devotee saw the devotee and said, he doesn't know what is he getting into. No, he was telling. He doesn't know what is he getting into. Later on I asked this devotee, what do you think you have got into? No, no, Prabhuji, I was just saying. He was telling, no. Do you have faith in what you are doing? Do you have firm faith in what you are doing? Are you happy with what you are doing? Or you are thinking, main phas gaya? You are thinking, I have got stuck here. So I think you are not satisfied in your spiritual life. Your mind is contemplating on sense gratification. And you are thinking that materialists are enjoying and I am suffering. You are thinking like that. Because you don't know, in material sense gratification is poison. Not for the sake of only theory, it's a reality. If you don't believe it, go ahead, do it and suffer it and then realize it. So one should, heart of hearts, have a firm faith in the Vedic authority. We should not only know these things for the sake of speaking to others. Okay, I have to give a DYS3 session. I got some nice points, which I can go and tell our boys, how Vedas are powerful. Not only for the sake of telling other people, how much faith you have, how much faith I have, we have to ask ourselves, the Vedic authority. Because certainly there are moments in our life when we are alone, with our own mind, with our own intelligence. At that time, do we have really faith? If your heart of hearts have faith that Bhagavan is none other than Krishna only, and Krishna only gives the knowledge to Brahma, Brahma gave it to Narada, and Narada gave it to Vyasa. This is the way the knowledge came in this world. And this is the ultimate truth. There is nothing else which is truth. Do I have full faith in this? We have to ask this question to ourselves. Because this Kali Yuga is the age of faithlessness. Because of the invasion of modern science, which supplies so many electronic gadgets and facilities and tools for the people to enjoy sense gratification, people are in a state of delirium. They are intoxicated by these facilities offered by scientists, and they are thinking that I don't have to do dharma to get artha, I don't have to do artha to get calm, I don't have to do all these things. I can simply pay some money and I can earn the facilities and luxuries. And for getting money, I will work like a donkey. People are thinking like that. So, that is why we have to weigh what the scientists are offering. And we have to weigh what the Vedas are offering. We have to compare both. See for ourselves. And then which is truth, which is falsity, which is offering long-term benefit, which is offering short-term benefit. Who is cheating? Who is telling the truth? Weigh them, see them for yourself, and then develop a very firm faith. That is very important. Prabhupada is saying everyone has to accept some authority. In that verse in Bhagavad Gita, Agnyascha Ashraddha Dhanascha Samshayatma Vinashati, there also Prabhupada is writing there. He says that there are people one of our boys, his parents are working with ISRO, Bangalore, ISRO, Indian Space Research Organization. So when he went to Bangalore, he went to IISc Bangalore and he met many scientists there, also in ISRO. So he was trying to preach to them. He said, although I am very small, he is from IIT Kharagpur, he said, I am a growing engineer, but still I would like to share with you some things I learnt. So when he told them that, you know, there are a lot of cheating that goes on in the name of science, and they all said, yes, very true. They immediately agreed. They said, it's very, very true, yeah. And there are many things which are passed as truths in science which are actually not true. We think they are true which are actually false. And they admitted, very true, they said. There are many things we see with telescopes and everything. for the sake of publishing paper, we present them, but we know they are false. Hmm? They agreed. And then he told them, so, now you surrender to Vedas. You surrender to Krishna. Here is the mala, please take it. Chant Hare Krishna. He told them. They said, no, we don't have faith that also. They said, that also we are not sure. We don't know how old are the Vedas. Because unless we can capture something in screw gauge and vernier calipers and pipette and burette, we cannot develop faith. They said, and he said, no, you should have some faith. If you don't put faith in God, then how will you advance? They said, just because the science is bogus doesn't mean we have to accept the Vedas. That is our stand. They were saying. Then he asked them, then where are you going to go? We don't know. They were saying, if you are not going to put faith either in the Vedas or in the science, then where will you go? They said, we don't know. So, this boy came back to me and said, just see this, see the plight of these people. This is what modern education has done to the students. They have put them in a state of agnostics. Actually, science itself can help us to show how science is bogus. Scientific research, how it is bogus, science itself can help us to know. Like, for example, somebody conducted research in Pepsi-Cola and said that, you know, if you put a teeth in Pepsi bottle for 1 week or so, it will dissolve completely. So, scientists are only making the Pepsi combination, chemical combination, and other group of scientists are showing how dangerous this is. So, scientists can defeat their own theories and their own propositions. They can do that. But science has not helped people to awaken knowledge and develop firm faith, transcendental faith. If you see the Vedic scriptures, it is just the opposite. Even a newcomer, a very, very newcomer, who is coming into the fold of follower of Vedas, right from day one, they will have faith without even having studied the Vedas. Like people would ask, like if somebody, if two boys are fighting in games, like we remember when we used to play, sometime when there would be a quarrel or something, you know, he would say, make some statement, he would ask, hey, why should I believe in you? Is it a Vedavak? He would ask like that. In India, it's very common. What is the meaning of Vedavak? Vedavak means it cannot be false. It is like an unshakable truth. We had complete faith like that. Even a person who doesn't know so much about the Vedas. What to speak of one who studies Vedas systematically under the shelter of a guru and takes to the sadhana, and through the sadhana he attains the sadhya, attains the results in stages, little by little, and the eyes of a sadhaka are opened more and more and more to see the world with a shastra chakshus, with the eye of the shastra. We can see the world and we can have experiences ourselves. We can have realizations. We can see the truth for ourselves. What is avidya? What is vidya? What is beneficial, non-beneficial? What is pure? What is impure? What is true? What is not true? For them, the truth is proven in their hearts, in their own lives. And then it's a path of increasing faith, more and more and more. The faith actually blossoms for a Vedic follower, one who is sincerely following. So, those who are taking to Krishna consciousness, if we have some faithlessness, that actually the faithlessness comes from the influence of the modern, postmodern civilization. Recently I was reading a book on the modern and postmodern youth. So the modern youth, what is their nature? According to them, we don't want to follow the traditions and rituals, you know, and, you know, rotating the agarbati and rotating the lamp and all these things. We don't want to do that, all those things. You know. We want to know why we do what we do. You have to prove to us scientifically, then only we will do. So this is modern man, modern boys. And they don't like stereotyped way of living. They want to know what is right, and they want logic, reason, scientific presentation. They say, don't bring religiosity, religion. Tell us scientifically. But then the beauty of modern people is, if you tell them scientifically, they will accept it. And then they are ready to put aside their false ego, false opinions, and then follow the right thing. These are modern people. Also, the modern people are more open. They say, I may belong to Christianity, but I don't mind accepting Hinduism. I may belong to Islam, but I don't mind accepting Hinduism. They are open. Modern people, which means whichever religion is able to convince me of the truth, I will accept it. So they are also modern people. And the modern people, certainly, they are looking for happiness. They want to be happy, but they want to attain happiness with logic and reason. They don't want to follow anyone blindly. This is modern. Now the postmodern civilization has come, especially in the West. What is postmodern? It's remarkably different, you will see. So one of the aspects of postmodern is, whatever feels good, do it. This is one of the first statements of postmodern. If you feel smoking is good, do it. Somebody may say, hey, you may get cancer. Don't be negative in thinking. Always think positively. If it feels good, do it. That's all. Just do it. That's why this Nike shoe statement, just do it, became very famous. That's how. Whatever feels good, do it. So now sometimes such people, they see this Hare Krishna devotees going in the road, playing music and bhajan and dancing. So when you interview them and ask them, how do you feel these people are? They said, colorful. They are wonderful. They are smart. They are jolly. And that is why this another movie song became very famous. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Ram. Why? Actually, they don't know the Mahamantra properly. They have seen people very jolly, so they have captured that mood of those people and put it in a song form. So it has become very famous. So now sometimes such people also come and join. The postmodern people also come and join the Hare Krishna party. They also dance. Sometimes they come to our temples also. Postmodern thinking people. But you'll be shocked to know. They come here to temple. They take the darshan because the deities look very beautiful. Kirtans are very beautiful. But then they will go. They will have free illicit connection with women. They will smoke. They will drink outside. They do all that. So their philosophy is whatever feels good, do it. So they are also nature lovers. You go to the offices nowadays. Everywhere they keep greenery in the office. So Prabhupada says the nature lovers are Shaktas. Because they worship the nature without Krishna. They don't worship Krishna. They only worship the nature. And Durga will give them kicks. Those who only worship Durga without Krishna, they will get suffering only. So they think, we may, like you see, I don't want to mention the name of the organization. One organization in Pune, they are also nature lovers. They became pretty famous in the West. Why? Because they make very beautiful, natural setting and everything. And but then if you go there, for a walk, morning or evening, you go there, you'll be shocked to see sights which you'll never want to see in those places. So they are living very close to nature, but they are not sages. Although occasionally they may sit in meditative posture, but most of the time they will be in a different posture. With man and woman you will find. So these kind of people, this is actually postmodern. They are very appealing to the postmodern mind. You see like that. And if you tell them, we have the spiritual textbooks, you study, we don't like academics, we don't like studying, we just want a free culture. We want free behavior, free culture. In fact, the leader of the lesbian gays, she's a woman. So she's speaking in an interview, she's saying that, I was thinking in my mind, why should a man marry a woman and why should a woman marry a man? Let us do something revolutionary. So I married a woman, she says. I am a woman, I married a woman for a change. Why should we go by a stereotyped way of living? She's asking. And she's the leader of the lesbian gays in the West. This is postmodern. So they follow no authority. They only follow the authority of their own mind. Devilish mind, which leads them to hell. This is postmodern culture. So, the postmodern people are more difficult to preach than the modern people. In India, still we have modern people, fortunately. But in America, we have mostly postmodern people, many places. And the postmodern people go by emotions. Emotions means whatever the mind feels. Like, you know, whatever mind feels good, they will never use the intellect, because intellect goes by reason. They don't want reason, logic. Whatever feels good, you do it. So, one very top publishing house, like McGraw-Hill or Macmillan or Penguin, in that level, very, very high level publishing house, they were looking in America for some Swamiji in America who knows the Eastern culture very well, who will be very well aware of the Eastern culture, and who has lived in the East for 20-30 years, and he has completely absorbed the Eastern culture. They were looking for someone like that. And also they were looking for someone, not only the Eastern culture, but we don't want Jnana Yogis or Dhyana Yogis or Ashtanga Yogis or Nanga Babas, Naga Babas and all these people. We are looking for people, Swami, who knows the bhakti wisdom of the East. Because they found out, see, this is done by the Westerners research. We want some, because bhakti, they understood, involves emotion. Emotion, devotion. Our Navagindra Swami, when he came to Pune, he was telling, bhakti means devotion. It should involve emotion, otherwise there is commotion. He was telling, So, they were looking for somebody who knows the path of bhakti yoga, which involves devotion and emotion. So, when they were searching for someone, at last they came across someone like that, who has lived in the East for 25-30 years and has absorbed the Indian civilization, is following the bhakti wisdom of India. Not only he knows theoretically, he lives it, he is practicing it, he is experiencing joy, he has reached a very high level of realization in that path. And not only that, he at the same time simultaneously knows the Western culture. He knows the minds of the Western people, who they are, what is postmodern civilization, modern and postmodern. He knows all these things. So one who is aware of both, he is born in the West and who has lived in the East and absorbed the bhakti yoga culture of the East. And then when they got to Swamiji, they discussed with him and they said, can you please help us with a book? Can you write a book? Which will be called as Bhakti Wisdom, based on Bhakti Wisdom, and that book should contain simple stories, just like the fruit vendor, you know, giving fruits to Krishna. That kind of simple stories written with full of emotion, which will touch the feelings of people, not only the intelligence of people. Because sometimes you can intellectually convince a person, but his heart is not convinced. A person convinced against his will is of the same opinion still, we say, no? So, when they asked him, so the Swamiji obliged, and then he gave them some topics. Just he wrote a few, just about 4-5 articles he wrote and he gave. And they were so deeply touched. They said, this is what we are looking for. And if this is published in America, it will create a revolution in America, entire America. They said, so that Swamiji happens to be a Swamiji within ISKCON. It is His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj. So that is why Maharaj is very busy with the book, is writing. And these books are targeted towards the postmodern civilization of the Western people, who are practically faithless. They don't have any faith in anyone, what to speak of Vedas. They don't have faith in scientists also, they have no faith in Vedas also, they have faith in nobody, they have faith only in the devilish minds. And now this book is supposed to go straight to their minds, purify their minds with the devotional emotions of Krishna consciousness. So, if this book is published in time and reached to nook and corner, millions of people may buy these books and read and get purified and get connected to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. And it's likely that this book and its preaching may bring about Prithipiti Ache the Nagaradi Gram, a Nagaradi town and city in America. It may reach to the people and it may awaken faith in their hearts. Because many faithless people have become faithful after reading Prabhupada's books. and they have, even many of us, we had many, many doubts before reading Prabhupada books, and we became purified of our doubts and became convinced. And when we did the practices, our faith became doubled and tripled and multiplied. So, different audiences need different type of approaches in order to, help them understand the glory of the Vedas and the authority of the Vedas. And then once a person starts studying the Vedas more closely, many Indians are not even ready to buy a book and touch. At least once they hear a lecture, they read a book, and then they get into the knowledge, then they can understand how wonderful it is. That is why our DYS Discover Yourself course is attracting a lot of people now, and subsequently they are put into many courses. And after a few courses, people, when they get awakened, they are very thankful. They are very grateful. Because otherwise, many people have reservation when they see the Bhagavad Gita in Sanskrit and everything. Some people in India have a foolish reservation. The other day when I was distributing books, they saw the Bhagavad Gita cover and they became very afraid. Oh, Mahabharata? No, 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 we don't want Mahabharata. No, we will not keep Mahabharata in our house. Because there will be some quarrel or something. But then I told them, the conclusion of that quarrel was wonderful. And the Pandavas became kings of the world. So, I said, you will have quarrel only if you are on the part of Adharma. Then you will suffer. I asked them, what do you want to do? You want to follow Dharma or Adharma? Yes, we want to follow Dharma. Then if you keep this book, you will become a king. Like Yudhishthira became the king. I told them, then they bought the book after that. So people have fear like that. Foolish fears, foolish reservations. So, as Prabhupada says here, towards the end, the common man follows the version of the scientist because scientist gives luxuries and comforts. This means that the common man follows the authority. The Vedic knowledge is also received in that way. The common man cannot argue about what is beyond the sky or beyond the universe, but must accept the versions of the Vedas as they are understood by the authorized disciplic succession. Just as a child learns everything from the mother, the name of everything we learnt in this world is from the mother. Mother only showed who the father is. Similarly, the Vedas are the mother, they show who God is, Krishna is. And the mother only shows all the other things, like what a cow is, what a tree is, what a bird is, mother shows. Similarly, all knowledge in this world comes by hearing. Once when I met Krishna Swaran Prabhu, he told an example which was so appealing, which I included in our books. He said, if somebody shows you a glass of light green liquid, it is kept on the table, and unfortunately no one is around. Now, it looks like lemon juice, so can you take the risk of drinking it? It's also likely it may be some other deadly acid. It may be poison also, if you drink it. It may be difficult for you to know. So, or you may have to conduct some test. It may take a long time to do the test. But if some person who prepared that liquid, he tells you, Prabhu, I have kept a lemon juice for you, please take it. Finished immediately, no more tests. Just drink it immediately. So that is Vedic authority. If you are searching, what the truth is like going, which is my ear, this is my nose, I may think. Or this is my nose. Because if I am trying to search the nose on my own, difficult. And then at last I may touch the nose. Or I may never get the nose going here and there. Isn't it? But the Vedas say, here is the nose. Very quick. Hearing and learning. That is Vedic knowledge. Not only Vedas, even science also. How do we learn science? Not that you go to the first year engineering, you are going to join electrical engineering, and then you start researching on what is electricity. Do you research that? The very first year you go, a book is put in front of you. Take this book. Study this, B.L. Taraja, whatever. You have to study the book. Study the book cover to cover. Study many more books. Do many, many experiments. And everything is based on authority. You don't do anything on your own. And then after finishing B.Tech, after finishing M.Tech, when you come to doctorate, then you are allowed to do research there. More on electricity. Similarly, you study Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, all these books, Prabhupada books, then practice chanting, sadhana. And then when you come to very advanced stage like the Goswamis, then we can meditate in the spiritual world on the Radha Krishna pastimes going on. That time research we can do. That research is meaningful. And the Goswami is simply meditating on spiritual world, they are telecasting. Everything they are watching there, they are putting down as Goswami literature. So this is not the time for research. This is time for following the authority. Entra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhaktavinda ki. Thank you very much.